Hi, this is Mark Atkinson, and you're listening to the Cherry Jam podcast.
Hello, and welcome to episode 25 of series 5 of Cherry Jam. Myself, Ed Price, Russ Brooks, and Jim Harley. No Loz or Snowy tonight. Loz probably still recovering from the quite exciting 1-1 draw for Liverpool and Manchester City. He was nothing if not magnanimous with the fact that that late penalty wasn't given. Don't look at his Twitter. Anyway, we will be talking this week about a really exciting, really good weekend of Six Nations rugby. We'll also chat about Gloucester Hartbury women securing their home semi-final, and also build up to next Friday and the final of the Premiership Cup at Kingsham against Leicester Tigers. We just wanted to start though this week briefly by mentioning Gloucester did actually play this weekend, a friendly against Bath. It was a very weakened team. I think, Russ, you would say that they sent the shags, which is a fair enough description. 50-odd 17 or 50-odd 15 or something like that. Not a lot to be said. I don't think I've seen any highlights. Apparently, there was one very good breakaway try scored by Gloucester Rugby. Albert Tuasui got a few minutes under his belt, which is good to see. But obviously, all of the key players weren't available or weren't being risked ahead of this Friday and the Premiership final.
I'm assuming that it wasn't on YouTube or anything, because they'd have been tweeting lots of links and stuff, because it seems a bit of a waste to not televise it, even if it's only a couple of angles.
It was weird, wasn't it? Because the club feed, I literally forgot the game was happening till today. The club feed, Twitter feed, was like at 60 minutes. So like only one score in the second half. And then the next one was they announced a full-time result. So it wasn't like the club even did a lot to sort of publicise it. It was very weird.
Mm. Yeah, because normally they're, you know, every score, every yellow card, every substitution, everything gets a tweet.
Yeah,
in it.
They kick off 20 minutes, half time, 60 minutes, full time. They were the tweets.
It's very weird, isn't it? Because, you know, the one thing you could say for our fans is if they could watch it, there would have been a lot of people who'd been interested. I mean, I couldn't watch it, but I would have been interested to have seen the highlights or heard how some of the young lads went.
Quite.
Just felt a weird one, didn't it?
Well, I think it was kind of booked for the right reasons to keep us fresh in this period. And obviously we've got the cup final, which wasn't guaranteed when the game was organised. And potentially we've got players that, you know, have had a little bit of game time with England A as well. So it hasn't been quite as necessary.
It was good that, I guess it's good that Charlie Atkinson got another game, given that he's conceivably cup tied, so he isn't going to get to play for a while. So he was about the only one, and Albert, obviously, I guess they're trying to get him a bit of game time back from injury. Beyond that, who are you going to risk? And you could see Bath didn't have a fixture by their side, because it was significantly stronger than ours.
Yeah, they played a lot of their what I would say their fringe players, and players that probably haven't had a huge amount of game time because of injury or lack of opportunities this season.
Which, to be fair to the club, is probably what we did originally intend. But as Jim said, we then got into a final. It's like, well, we don't want to risk it. You could imagine the backlash if we'd have played a couple of players who could play on Friday, and someone key just gets twinged in a pointless game.
Yeah, exactly. You've got to be sensible about this. Not a lot to read into it. I mean, there's enough asterisks there to finish off a battle with the Romans.
Loz enjoyed the asterisks, didn't he? He's a big fan.
He loves the asterisks. Right, we're going to move on to talking about some of the Six Nations players. We'll start with England, because it's the only place really to start. Probably England's biggest win and probably best performance since the World Cup semi-final in 2019, a much more coherent, intense and performance with a huge amount of attacking flair. England win it in the last kick of the game with a drop goal by Marcus Smith. And Russ, you quite rightly made the point on our WhatsApp group, even broken clocks are right twice a day. And I'm going to take that to the bank. I did actually predict that. I did predict it more than hope than anything else. But yeah, I will freely admit I went absolutely mental when we won that game. And what's lovely to see, and I'll come to you first, Russ. We've been moaning and bemoaning the lack of attacking flair that England have played with for years under Jones and Borthwick. And it's suddenly as if clicked and they went, oh, actually, if we throw the ball around a bit, we might cause the team a problem.
Yeah. And I think what also impressed me was we didn't go away from that game plan. They stuck to it throughout the whole game.
I'm going to disagree with you because there was 20 minutes.
Well, okay, that's fair. No, that's fair. That is fair, but it was the fact that that's fair. There was 20 minutes when they went away from it, but they went back to what got them there. So when Lowe scored, and to be fair, Ireland scored a very good try, you kind of thought, well, you know, we were all like, oh, we gave it our best. But that 20, and to be fair, Snowy called it, didn't he? He said that 20 minutes not taking the chance, and you went, not taking the chance, we're going to cost us. But then Daly missed, and you're like, oh, God. But they kept going and they kept going. They played through the advantages that they had. They didn't like just try and take the penalty. They kept attacking. Mm. And I think there was a good variety in the play. Some aggressive ball carriers. Scrum, you know, I'm not Dan Cole's biggest fan, but it's funny how when Porter and Furlong have to scrummage fairly against good props, they get, they're not actually as world-class as people think they are. Mm-hmm. It's always good when Porter has to actually, you know, Porter is boring in before the scrum's even set. I wonder if he comes through his front door or through his window sometime. so it was nice, credit that the ref made it, it was nice that that was ref. The breakdowns were well contested. Underhill makes a difference because he can keep a team like Ireland honest, can't he, at the breakdown because he's so good. The backs much better. I'm not even going to attempt to pronounce the Exeter's wing name, but he
Manuel
Feyerozo. Yeah, Feyerozo.
To be fair to him, Russ, I was going to pick him out later, but you bring great to bring him up now.
I mean, he doesn't look like, you know, we were lots of people baffled by his. We were not baffled, but thing always is too soon. But he didn't look out of place at all, did he?
He looks a good player. He looks a good player.
There were some very good players. Slade was better, and what gives me hope about England is there are still players there who could have been who I still think were found wanting. You know, there's a lot to build on from here. Mm. I won't go into that yet, but yeah, I was just really pleased. Forwards carrying aggressively, you know, they Earl was superb. You know, I give him a lot of flack for his fist pump, and he can fist pump all he likes after that, but just having a forward running hard into contact, looking for offloads, kind of all the same sort of stuff we've bemoaned from Gloucester, and we've seen that when Gloucester started playing it, it makes a difference. Yeah, it's exactly what we all wanted, and it's the first time in a long time I've been really emotionally invested in a game. I was with them all the way through. There were those moments of frustration, but it was more like, oh God, guys, you've blown it, rather than, oh, here we go, and like starting to lose interest. They kept me invested till the end, and I was so pleased for that team when they won.
Yeah.
And the other thing I'd like to add is I absolutely, as a toddler dad, feel Danny Kerr's pain when he did that interview. For his 100th cap, that had to be a stitch up that they interviewed him while he was holding his toddler who was trying to take the microphone to pieces.
Yeah, it was very enjoyable. I did particularly like the fact that they ended up giving him another microphone and the toddler went for the other mic as well. Very good. Jim, on the performance, Russ has already mentioned Faye Webozo as one of the key sort of standout players, Ben Earl another. Anybody else you wanted to pick out from that England team on Saturday?
I think Mitchell probably deserves a little bit of praise. I think the speed of ball was really, really high. and he made some good decisions. There was one opportunity, I think he was kind of looking to go right and then pulled it back round and ran it left. So he's kind of, he's doing what he thinks is best, and more often than not, he's making the right choices. So I like that. But yeah, I think as a squad, you know, as a 22, they all performed. They kept the intensity up, kept the physicality up, and there was no kind of selfishness. And I mean, in the Welsh game, which we'll come on to, you know, there was quite a lot of selfish play and kind of passes three on one, and why don't you just pass it sort of situation. But England don't seem to have that. They've got a really good team bond, I think, that they, like you say, Ben Earl might be fist pumping and celebrating, but he'll do it no matter who scores. And he, you know, they're the first to congratulate someone that has scored. They do seem to rally around each other, and a lot of work off the ball.
Yeah,
I think that's, I think it's, you know, if you watch a game of rugby and watch what's happening away from the ball, it's almost like a completely different game. You know, you can see so much going on. And if you just follow the ball, you maybe miss huge amounts of work that like the second rows or whatever are doing.
I think that you mentioned the second rows. They're the other people I'd single out. I thought Toje was, you know, he's always good. There was one clear out that was just ridiculous where Ireland all hit it. And then on his own, he cleared them out. But I really like George Martin as well. I think he's... I think trying to do, like, whenever I've talked in the past about Gloucester needing a big enforcer type, he's kind of that modern day one where he's just got that physical presence. But, and he is on the line sometimes, isn't he? He does every now and then put a bad tackle in, or he's gives silly penalties, but he's right on that line of just like the physicality. He put a huge hit on Byrne at one point, and he just leads and carries, and he's dominant, and he kind of feels that player that England have lacked for a long time. And it was really nice to see us have that from our second rows. Again, it's something we've sort of said Gloucester lacked, so it was nice to see England start bringing that physicality and that carrying in the second row as well, I thought.
Yeah, I think, look, I mean, we have to be honest about it. No one really saw this performance coming. I mean, if you look at the Twitter is not the best example of genuine fan thought on this, but it was almost universal. And I think, you know, they mentioned it in commentary on Saturday that there was probably the first time in a long time that the majority of England fans went into that game on Saturday expecting an Ireland win.
But I think what was good was Ireland's fans have handled it with grace, and their media didn't do anything to make it really bad for them if they lost.
One thing I would say, this is the interesting thing, is for the most part, the Irish supporters I kind of read and spoke to, don't get me wrong, they expected to win, because you would do. Ireland are a very good team. They're number one in the world for a reason. But the expectation, there was that sort of slight concern by a lot of Irish fans that this could happen. I didn't personally see it. I thought that England probably, almost what happened, England would probably take him to a point, and Ireland's ability, confidence and genuinely world-class talent would see them through. But the Irish media can definitely do one, because they definitely set them up for a fall. Some of the stuff that was being written in the build-up of the week was just absolutely ridiculous.
If
the English press had done that, I mean, it would be, you can imagine the nonsense that we'd get back.
Ireland are where we were in 2003, weren't they? So you go back
to when we got to report a final.
But I mean, in terms of that level, in terms of the Six Nations, they are, because France have fallen off, haven't they? They are so far above where the rest of us are. And that's what England were like. And we had a habit of blowing Grand Slams. And I think really what it shows is just how hard a slam is to win. Because if you flip it, England were the underdogs, which Ireland have been for years. And England found out that because it's a one-off game, basically. It was like a final for us. We've got the incentive, no pressure. If we win, we stop the slam. Ireland have to win. And England used to be found wanting under that pressure. And that's why we used to be accused of the arrogant English and so on. And then now Ireland are in that position, aren't they? And That's why there's such a lens on their staff. Like seeing Furlong, I mean, he's got to get an Oscar for that dive on that clear.
There were a few things I didn't like. I mean, don't get me wrong, it was reckless by Genge. I was surprised they didn't look at that in more detail. You can only assume that they were looking at that in the background, but I was surprised that it didn't make more of that. But yeah, it was a dive at the end of the day.
And
the other thing I wanted to just kind of raise though on the England performance was, and I thought Matt Dawson sort of encapsulated this at the end on the BBC Rugby podcast. He mentioned the fact that the reason why England won was because we played expansive and attacking with expansive and attacking intent. As soon as we started moving back to that kicking style, Ireland came back into it and we lost momentum. England have got to play with that level of intensity. I think defensively, one thing there's been a lot of complaints around the blitz defence, but you can definitely see if you play with that blitz defence and you put pressure on a team like Ireland, or we probably will do, I mean, you're assuming we do against France, make them make mistakes and then don't give them the ball back. You know, control the possession, control the territory. You're going to give yourself a lot more opportunity to score tries and score points. That's the big thing. And that's the thing we have to sort of take forward, not only for England, we've got to hope that probably more widely in rugby, that type of game and the games this weekend were exciting because teams kept the ball more.
Oh, for sure. The ping pong kicking contests do seem to be fading out. And I think when they do happen, actually, teams are maybe a little bit more confident to keep kicking it until they win that kicking battle. But those kicking battles happen a lot less because players are maybe they've been empowered a little bit by the coaching teams that when the opportunity is there and they see, you know, a prop or a second row or something, you know, in a centre position, they'll go, right, there's three of us back here. I'm going to attack that player. I'm going to see if I can, you know, create an overlap. And it does make for very exciting rugby. Those counter-attacks, I think scoring tries from 5 metres out is one thing, but scoring tries from inside your half because you've seen an opportunity and you kind of, you pin your ears back and absolutely go all out to make that break. I think it's really good to watch.
Yeah, I think the other thing to add to what Jim said is rugby's quite cyclical as well, isn't it? And we've gone through some dross for a long time, but teams will always adapt and have to change and evolve, because we had that phase where the Exeter way dominated, didn't it? Just continual ball retention, more, ruck, ruck, ruck. And the kicking was almost a counter to that of don't let them in your 22, keep them out.
Yeah.
And then I think what we're seeing and what I hope is happening is teams going, right, we've got to find a way around this because we can't compete with those teams that kick well. Because teams who do this well are dominating, aren't they? If you can kick territory well, you'll do better from it. So hopefully what's happening are teams are working ways around. And like Jim said, you know, teams are working out ways to run back from deep now and can take counter territory. And I think the 50-22 almost helps with that as well, because if you kick aimlessly and you can punish them and move them around, there are ways that you can get the ball back. So hopefully stuff like that will happen. And it also helps, I think you mentioned this before, Ed, if you want to stop it being a dirge and dull game, take those areas where it can be slowed, like the scrum. If you ref it properly, it speeds it up, because the scrums I thought in that game were well refed all across the weekend, actually. Yeah. There weren't many games where you're like, oh, the scrums are slowing it down. And even Omani, who committed the most cynical, that's one of the most cynical fouls I've seen in a long time. It was nice that the ref didn't mess around. It's like, no, you're gone. And I think that's what you need, is if you enforce the laws correctly and encourage teams to attack and move it around, that seems to be helping. So it was a nice weekend where we're not moaning about ref costing anyone games. I don't think there were, other than that clear out, which with, I don't think there were many contentious decisions. I don't think anyone could moan anyway.
No, the Irish are moaning about the fact that there was I think before the second try or third England try, Freeman was actually in touch, but Ireland actually got the ball back from that play.
He threw it in, and they got the possession.
Ireland got the ball back, went through two phases, and then kicked it, and it didn't go out. And then from that, we scored our second try. So I do have some sympathy. Look, yeah, it should have been called, but the TMO shouldn't be calling that out. You know, as we said before, TMO gets involved far too much. So actually, if it's missed on the field and it's a genuine error, yeah, it happens. But Ireland actually had the opportunity to clear; they didn't. And the other one, I think, was in there was an issue around. I think Theo Down actually did it. If you watch the lineout that sets up England's play into the 22 and the drop goal eventually, from that lineout, it's a definite double movement on the throw.
Yeah.
But you know, it wasn't called in real time. And as we found out talking to Carl Dixon last year, you're not allowed to go back and bring that up as an offence. Just quickly before we move on to the other games for us. We should say that I think we're all still not convinced about some of the players in the squad and the balance, particularly around the side. I mean, it was great. I thought Ollie Chessman had a really good game, but from a back row balance point of view, I know we won, but I still don't think it was quite right. And I also don't think, you know, Luca Daly, Cole had a good game, but realistically, how much more have we got
in him? There's a few, Care. I'm really chuffed for Danny Care to get 100 caps. I think it's very well deserved. Mm-hmm. But there's a few. It's hard to think. I still worry about Furbank. I don't see Furbank over Stewart too much. Like, there's lots I like about Furbank, but there's still a lot he's got to work on.
I don't think Freddie Stewart would have struggled to do anything that Furbank did.
No, I mean, his finish for the try was superb, to be fair, but he did make a couple of mistakes, and that's what I mean. I hope they come out of his game. You know, Daly just feels done to me. I think he was in the squad
for one reason and one reason only, and that's the fact that he can kick a 50-meter penalty, and he missed it.
And what's annoying?
And he can also play three. He can play three positions. So from a bench point of view, that's a really useful thing for Borthwick. But I would argue there's better players out there.
I think
who can do that?
And I think that's the thing, Ed. And I'm trying to be kind, because I think, you know, Borthwick is on. I feel like the trajectory of Borthwick is improving. And you know, we've talked about, you can only change so many of that squad at a time with the way the England squad rules work. So hopefully a few of them will go. There are a few that face props. Prop is difficult because there's not a lot of people out there, is the argument.
I think
but
Hayes is unlucky.
Yeah, Cole is keeping his own teammate out, and he did again, really hard to rate because we were both there. But that England A game, they looked good, they looked capable. And if you don't try these players, you're not gonna, you know. But equally, someone told me France at home is a hard one to tinker with. I think what we'll see, because Loz made a good point, didn't he, that almost winning this game could be one of the worst things that happens for England, because the hype and getting carried away. I think what it will show is how serious they are about playing this style of play, or if they revert to type against France. Because if you revert, you can't kick the ball to France. And then if they win that game and win it well by playing attacking rugby, that's two good games that is evidence as to you have to change your ways. And so it kind of feels like a good opportunity to see what England are about going forward. So I certainly didn't expect us to beat Ireland. Very pleased we did. But I think even if we'd have lost that game, I'd have been pleased with the way we went at it till the end.
So
that 20 minutes apart, like you said, and hopefully that's them learning their lesson.
Yeah, I think George Ford had a good first 20 minutes. I thought his second 20 minutes was poor, and his, you know, third 20, maybe from about 30 to 50 wasn't very good. And it allowed... allowed Ireland back into the game. I don't equally think that there's enough necessary to say that Marcus Smith is the next 10 now. I think there's probably enough doubt there that we haven't seen Marcus Smith control a game for 80 minutes against the top side, mainly because he hasn't had the opportunity to do so yet. My gut feeling would be if you're going to play an attacking and expansive game against France, you have to start Marcus Smith. But Borthwick is a conservative coach. So the expectation probably will be something similar. We'll play forward for 50 to 60 minutes and bring Smith on.
I think the other Smith needs to be in the equation a bit more going forward as well, because he's got that game management, not at the level that George Ford has, but not to flog a dead horse with my point about blooding players so that they are experienced. It would be nice, and you probably won't, you're not going to do it against France, but later series in the summer, tours, etc. I hope that they give both the Smiths a chance to start building that experience up, because they feel like they could complement each other, Ed. And then Ford's not a bad third 10 to have in a squad, is he, in?
Just on the, obviously next weekend, there is an outside chance that England could actually win the championship, which I think we'd all say would be almost absolutely no chance at the beginning of the championship. That's because Scotland lost to Italy, which we did all think could happen. We did say that that was the game Italy were definitely going to target, Jim, and they deserved it. Let's be fair, Italy absolutely deserved it. And also, nice to see Stephen Varley on the score sheet as try scorer.
Yeah, it was a quality game. Very, very emotional. And I think it was really noticeable that they didn't buckle at the end. They matured such that all Scotland wanted was a penalty kind of somewhere near the middle of that half, which would have been a relatively easy kick. And they were very, very disciplined. For the last few minutes, didn't go into rucks particularly, didn't stress. I mean, I thought there were probably two forward passes that Scotland got away with before the knock-on that maybe even wasn't the knock-on. I thought they were very, very good to kind of manage the game the way they did, and deserved winners. And it's hopefully, I wouldn't say they're a team low on confidence, even though they've got this huge run of losses up to now. But I would hope that's really encouraged them, and they will obviously go to Cardiff and put 50 points on potentially one of the worst Welsh sides in many years. So that would be good. Note that tickets are still available for that game as little as £20.
Unsurprisingly. I mean,
you pay more to go and see Gloucester in a blooming cup game, don't you? So they're clearly struggling if they can't sell out the Millennium at that sort of price.
No, I mean, the one thing to bear in mind as well is that you think about Italy's results, this Six Nations, with the exception of Ireland. I know that the England school, actually, when you look at it, it was a last-minute score they'd already lost. So it makes it look closer to them. But they were within a score of England. They were within a width of his post and actually probably should have been a retaken penalty against France.
They were robbed.
They were robbed, really, against France.
Yeah.
And then they've gone and beaten Scotland. You know, Italy really, I mean, with the exception of England, they did lose that, right? They lost that. Ireland, they got thumped, but they could have been going to Wales going for three wins, which they've never done before. You feel aggrieved if you're Italian. I wonder with the Welsh game though, they've got the danger for Italy, Russ, is ironically overconfidence. And I never thought I'd say that about Italy and the Six Nations, but there's a potential that they might go there thinking, well, we should beat Wales.
I don't think there is, because they've had to work for this result, and for the reasons you've said, Ed, they haven't had a lot of luck, have they? They've played well all Six Nations, and I think what I did find annoying was the commentary of people like Nolly acting like this was like the greatest thing ever that Italy have done. This has been coming for a while, and I think we have seen it coming. They've improved week on week. they've got the players now. Their back line is superb. I really like the balance of their back line. I mean, if Gloucester needs some centres, can we sign Breck? Can we sign Brex and Menocello? They were superb all game. And then you look at the players they've got outside them. I really like Gabrisi at 10. And they've started showing more. I mean, Capuzzo is superb going forward, but he put a hell of a tackle in on Van der Merwe towards the end when Scotland were starting to go all Harlem Globetrotters. It's an interesting game because, to be fair, Wales haven't got a lot to lose either, have they? Because they're going to argue that they're on a rebuilding. They're not a good side at the moment and they're trying to build. So I think it could be quite an open-ended game, which I think might suit Italy with the backs they've got now. So
I think the one thing that's different is that it's Italy, they say, with the exception of the Ireland game, Italy in previous years, when they would go a couple of scores down, like 10 points, 11 points down, you'd often see they panic a bit and then they'd give penalties away and it would just get worse and worse and worse. When actually, look, you can give yourself 5-10 minutes, calm everything down, get back into the game by just a bit of score ball pressure. And they seem to be learning that, yeah, there are going to be positions and times in the game where you're not going to have it all your own way. And actually, it's a case of riding it out and going again. What I did like particularly about the Italians, you said, is that the never sort of die bit at the end, where, you know, in previous games there they've lost it because of they've gone and made that stupid tackle,
Their defence was superb. I mean, their captain, Lamaro, was superb defensively. He's a really underrated seven, I think. I was just looking at the stat. He made 24 tackles, which is, you know, just ridiculous. I really like, and you think they've lost Pledri, but their back row is still one of their strongest points. Negri was superb, considering he missed two games. Another one who got away from Gloucester, but, you know, superb. And they're still a fairly young side as well, aren't they? So,
and the under-20s are starting to
not bad, are
make,
they?
Make real, you know, they're starting to make inroads again. They haven't the Scottish under-20s this weekend.
I mean, it makes it. You think a few years ago, everyone was saying, oh, relegation, need to get Italy out of Six Nations, and it's just so nice to see them blow everyone out of the water with that argument now, because they clearly have a side that, if they build right, is sustainable. And hopefully when Wales get relegated and Georgia come up, they can do the same thing, because, you know, that Wales side are terrible. And I'd argue, if you're going to throw that at Italy, you could throw it at Wales now. And also, what was nice is we haven't seen a brave Scotland result for a long time.
It was nice to see a brave Scotland. France game was brave Scotland, wasn't it?
Yeah, but not as much as this, where you're like, oh, look, they've been so brave. It was so funny watching Hastings, Scott Hastings, the grudging respect he gave. I mean, it was a day for it with Darcy as well. Yes, well done, England. Well done. Well done, Italy. I'm really pleased for you. It was nice. And I think it's really good for the Six Nations, because it's done away with that, oh, when are Italy going to win? And hopefully they can get recognised for what they do offer week in, week out a little bit more.
Yeah.
I mean, I think like you said, Ed, that, you know, they've never won three games, have they, the Italians? And I think, obviously, they could, if things had gone their way, they could potentially be having their easiest fixture to get that third win. But I think next year, you know, they will understandably be looking to, you know, to get the Grand Slam. I mean, why not? You know, it's like, I think we've got all the teams now of a standard that it kind of makes, because close games are entertaining games, aren't they? Especially, you know, it's a neutral. I love watching a close game.
Well, O'Driscoll made the point, I think it was, that, you know, with the exception, everyone's kind of beating everyone, really, bar, you know, with England beating Ireland, it shows that it could be quite an open tournament next year. I mean, England, Scotland and France are all basically on the same points, aren't they? We've got one more point. You know, Italy could end up on 11 at the end, potentially 12. It's been quite an open tournament, and the gap, you know, I think what England has shown is Ireland are beatable. So it's quite nice to see, because unless it's England, I don't want to see one team dominate the Six Nations, really, because it's just not really that. It doesn't make it interesting, does it? Thinking, oh well, this is a given this week.
One thing I do think, though, I have to say, was that the Italian celebrations. What I liked about that was, obviously, it's the first time in 11 years now that since Italy last won a game at home. You've got an opportunity now that they can back it up, back-to-back wins, which I don't think they've only done once before. You've got a real opportunity for Italy to sort of cement their place in third, or not third place, or potentially fourth place. And then, as you say, Russ, next season with the fixtures reversed, there are three fixtures at home, and that could be, you know, one of them obviously being Ireland, but France still in rebuild mode, Wales, you know, go to, if they play with the same sort of spirit and flair and attacking intensity again at Scotland, that could, they could cause problems. Just one quick side note before we move on to the Welsh-France game. The under-20s, I watched the last 25, 30 minutes of the England-Ireland game and then caught up with the rest of it from the wreck on Friday night. One of the more shocking refereeing decisions I've seen in a while, to hand Ireland an opportunity at the end to score. If people haven't seen it, the last line out is one of the, it's such a not straight line out. And you just think to yourself, you stood there, you stood 5 meters from it, mate. It's not that hard. In the grand scheme of things, it doesn't really mean a huge amount in the under-20s, but I felt England, they're getting a little bit closer to what we expect the England under-20s to be after a couple of years of failure. So it's good to see them getting back. Although it's weird, they keep having draws with Ireland. I think it's the third time they've drawn with Ireland in the last year. Weirdly, moving on to the Wales-France game. Before we finish this section, France, the power in the second half of France told as they demolished the Welsh side. I mean, it could have been, I think, two or three more tries if the French had stopped dropping the ball over the line. But one thing you mentioned there about the scrums and how the scrums are refereed out over the weekend, Jim, I think most obviously shown in this in the Wales-France game, where Luke Pearce was very adamant, look, yeah, France has got the dominant scrum, but if that ball's at the back of the scrum...
Yeah, use it. He was telling them to use it a lot, and you thought, you know, even in situations where they've got a penalty and they've decided on a scrum, and, you know, because they think they've got the ascendancy, you think, well, you have, but if you're not pushing it forward at a rate of knots, you're going to get told to use it. Or if you're pushing before the ball's gone in, you're going to get a free kick against you, which is rather silly. Yeah, I mean, it's trying to speed up the game, and I think it's you know, it's working well. But like you said, you know, they just bludgeoned their way to the line on numerous occasions, and I thought, you know, the scrum halves kept the play going at rapid fire speed, lots and lots of, you know, the big guys working hard to be in that position, running onto the ball with like full pace, and just smashing the defensive line and getting over the gain line over and over again. And yeah, I think they were a little bit unlucky. I think the one try that was pulled up for being a knock on, I mean, it probably was a knock on.
The one under the posts.
Yeah,
that was a knock on. Yeah,
but I'd say you couldn't say. I mean, we talked about stuff that you couldn't say for definite, and I think you don't see enough of the ball to see that there's definitely separation.
I thought, to be fair, the first time I saw that, I thought when they showed it on the screen, I thought, yeah, it's probably a knock on.
Yeah, it's probably a knock on, but you can't say categorically that it was. Therefore, surely the try should stand. And It's just, it's you know, I mean, it doesn't really matter because
they scored three more tries.
Yeah.
I mean, you talk about the scrum half, Russ, the pass from Legarret, everyone will know what we're talking about here, the pass from Legarret, which I think, to be fair to him, Six Nations have basically stuck it on a repeat on one of their tweets, is ridiculous.
I mean, it is ridiculous. I couldn't kick it that far. I couldn't, like, you know, I couldn't even throw a normal pass a fraction of that distance with that accuracy. Because I think the first time I saw it, you're like, there's no way he's, you know, he's got lucky. But then when you watch the replay, you see where his eyes are, his head, he knows exactly what he's doing. And
go straight into the 10's hand.
Yeah, yeah. I know, it's perfect. It's absolutely, like, you know, he turns a situation where you're like, oh my God, he's going to get smashed into an attacking threat. And the only player I've ever seen do passes like that was Gummersall for us, where he had a habit of doing that behind the back thing. And you could probably be a bit glib and say, just learn to pass off your left hand properly. But it was really good. And you, at some point, you do start to wonder, because people have said that France are weaker without Dupont. I think any other year, they're nines of both class, and it shows just what a level Dupont is, that they're missing him with the nines that they've both bought through, because neither of them looked out of place. And from a Gloucester perspective, I thought, I've only seen the highlights, but Thomas Williams looked really sharp and looks a really good signing for us. You know,
he's been very good. He's one of the very few bright spots for Wales. And actually the other bright spot, and I'm convinced of it now, that Tommy Rafael has to be first name on the team sheet in terms of back row for the Lions.
He's ridiculous.
Unbelievable.
Some of his tackles were superb. Yeah. But it's, I mean, his work on the floor.
How do you turn over ball in that bad a pack? Because he should be getting smashed and cleared out, because he's on his own and he is winning really good turnovers. And it's the same with Thomas Williams. It's like that Welsh back pack is going backwards at a rate of knots a lot of the time, and he's getting nothing from them, and he's still able to spot gaps. His pass is exactly what we've all been asking for, isn't it? Is really quick off the mark. So I'm really excited to see how our coaches can make his box kicking like a star standard and slow him down, because otherwise he's in danger of not fitting our game plan. But on a serious note, it's nice to see a player like that and be excited about what he could bring to us.
Yeah. I mean, going on about the 35, 40 meter wonder pass. I just think it's just such a shame it didn't result in a try.
Because
it was so close. I think on a slightly wetter day, he'd have slid in, wouldn't he?
Yeah.
It would have been try of the tournament, and you know, that it would have been coming up on highlight reels for decades to come.
It's really worrying. Like, France have had a bad year, but to say that, like, the difference between Wales are having a rebuild season and France are having a rebuild is staggering, isn't it? You know, France have still got, I mean, that finish by Fiku was just ridiculous. Pernot was
unplayable. Second half,
I could watch him play rugby all day, but you think of the players they've got to come back in, they're not going to struggle for long, are they?
No. I think it's definitely an opportunity this next weekend against France in Lyon, where you never know. You can see if England play that expansive. I mean, it could be an incredible game if England play that expansive rugby against a French side who likes to play an expansive rugby.
It could be a 100-point game.
It could be something silly. I mean, we could be going back to, I mean, not necessarily 2015 levels, but not far off. I mean, it could be really good.
I want, if it ends up really high scoring, the highlights will be if they release the Sean Edwards footage afterwards. That would be almost as exciting to watch as the game.
He was quite animated at half time, wasn't he?
Yeah. Almost as animated as Gatland at the end of the game, if you did catch that.
It was like Farrell having a go at Borthwick. I'd still love to know what was being said there.
Yeah, I think, to be fair, there was a lot of in both the ITV and BBC coverage this weekend, there was some crap. They managed, the guys on the camera crews managed to catch some really good bits of additional content that drive a bit of social media interest and drive a bit of that extra fan interest. And I think it was good to see. You want to see passion. Look, it's I think for too long, you know, particularly some of the coaches seem a bit robotic. I mean, it can never be as funny as watching Eddie Jones scream, "Get the tea on! Get the tea on! Where's that fucking tea?"
Oh, I if don't you know.
You need to see that documentary, by the way. It's amazing.
The best one is still Sean Edwards in Broken French.
Yeah, stop fucking around with
just stop fucking about with the ball.
Kick the fucking ball.
You do whatever he told you to, wouldn't you? Like, just the way he says it.
Proper Wigan, like Wigan accent interspersed with French, but kick the fucking ball. Also the Gatland, if people haven't seen it, Gatland just storming off because they haven't got the feed through the interview is perfect. It's absolutely perfect. There's nothing funnier than Wales getting the wooden spoon. So futsal sorry. Right, on that note, we will be pausing, coming back. Jim, we're going to talk about the women's Gloucester Hartbury women securing their semi-final at home and then build up to next Friday.
Hi, I'm Lewis Ludlow and you're listening to Cherry Jam.
Jim, you saw some of the game on Friday. I mean, you had to rush off to see the Skittles, but I've seen the highlights subsequently of Gloucester Hartbury's excellent win over Harlequins. Yeah. I just want to get your views at the ground and at the game, and then we'll kind of talk about more widely about the season and the rest of the season as it comes.
Yeah, I mean, I was at King's Own for the first half and then had to dash off to the Wolves Club. God rest its soul. for playing Skittles second half. But I watched it on the I watched it on my phone.
Yeah.
When I got there, so yeah, it was pretty typical, really. We kind of started a little bit slow, went behind, and then just solid performance. I mean, Pip Hendy, I thought, was really unlucky not to get player of the match last time out, and she had another fantastic performance. But it was Nell Metcalf, the other winger, that got the player of the match. And I think she got a hat trick. Just really, really solid play. Like very few errors. I think there were a couple of maybe a mistouch from a penalty or something like that. You know, a couple of little things, but nothing too much. But it seems to be against Harlequins. They are used to be a very good side, and I think they're starting to tire a lot more. So they don't quite have the 80-minute performance that Gloucester Hartbury do, and it sort of turned on about 50 minutes that Gloucester Hartbury just came out. Certainly second half, they were scoring for fun and really, pushed the scoreboard and, you know, widened that victory significantly.
Yeah, I mean that's the real bonus, as we've mentioned in the last couple of weeks, the fact that the points difference is not being in our favour, and obviously with Saracens getting a bit of a thump in as well today by Bristol, it does give a real big advantage to Gloucester. We've obviously secured our home semi-final. I think with the fixtures as they are, you would expect that Gloucester will finish top. They will finish top now. It's going to be interesting, as you said the other week, Jim, about how we target that final game away at Saracens, because Saracens look, they're not the same side as they were. They are a side that's struggling a little bit for form and for injuries, and Gloucester seem to be getting all their players back at the right time. And more importantly, we've saw a couple of re-signings on Friday night as well.
So obviously the two captains re-signed, although I thought that had happened already. I must have missed it. and that was last year or something. So that's obviously great news that they've sort of committed their future to the club. I saw Mia Venner was kind of, I think she was the additional substitute, so she didn't take the field, but obviously she's now match match ready, back from fitness. I think the others are due to probably play maybe a game before the six, maybe play next week before the Six Nations starts for the girls. So yeah, it's going to be looking good. And I think much like Harlequins are a team, you know, you look at like Shauna Brown, who retired and came back this season, and Burford, who's, you know, long time called time on her England career, that Saracens are they're a little bit older, and you know, Gloucester Hartbury are anything but, they are full of under 20s. They've got that conveyor belt that we keep talking about at Hartbury, just churning out quality players, and I think that competition for places is really, really healthy, because people know that if they have an off game, if they don't put it in training, then there's someone else just, you know, desperate for that starting berth or that berth on, you know, that seat on the bench or whatever. So it's really keeping everyone on their toes, and it allows for good rotation as well, and keeping everyone's skills up. So yeah, I would have thought if we can come out of the Six Nations, because we've probably got about 140 players or something playing in the Six Nations.
Yeah.
If we can come through the Six Nations without significant injury and fatigue and everything, then that final game against Saracens, which the way things are going is looking like it will be to go unbeaten for the season. Yeah. Do you stack it and go unbeaten for the season, or do you rotate and potentially still go unbeaten? You know, but it's a really real tough one, because you can see that kind of it would be brilliant to go there and win and have an unbeaten season, and you know, that would sort of go down in the history books. But if you go there, have an unbeaten season, and then lose a semi or a final, then that would be pointless.
It might depend at the end of the day on where Saracens are, because Saracens, I think they've confirmed they're in the playoffs.
Yeah, but they're not home.
They're not home yet, so they've got a game in hand over Exeter and Bristol, but it's very tight in that top four and those three spaces. So it could depend if Saracens win their game in hand and the other games they've got going into the final game, they may have already secured that home, and then that might change the dynamic somewhat. But it's an interesting dynamic. I think if I was in charge of the Gloucester Hartbury team, I think you just got to trust whoever you put out, because let's be fair, they've played sides this year with supposedly a weakened team, and then they come out on top against good strong opposition. So you've got to give these girls an opportunity and trust them to do the job. And then how much extra benefit that does to the squad? It means that they're putting pressure on the supposed first teamers. I think it's just a brilliant scenario all round.
I think you would go. The coaches seem to have built a really good ethos collective in that side. Mm. They, like you said, as someone who watches from afar, not having the time or ability to get down there, they win games, they grind out games, and you can call on that squad. So I guess they would have a good feel based on all those factors at the time, Ed.
Yeah.
So you would hope they'd call on that. I think the one thing I really liked as well, just to go back to, I thought it was a really nice touch to do those re-signing announcements at halftime in a game. Yeah. That was a really... really different to when, because sometimes I think what's difficult about the men's one is you almost have to just be watching Twitter at the right time to know they're coming.
Yeah. Big news coming at midday. Big news.
Well done. It's 6:05. It's time for a contract announcement in 36 and a half seconds. Yeah, it's very bizarre. And I think it kind of rewards the fans who are there. It gives them something to look forward to and something to buy into at halftime. So I thought that was a very nice touch and a very good way of keeping people interested and invested. And it's almost like I think there might be some value in doing that in the men's. I always remember when we signed Nieto and Bortolami, it was after, but to have them brought out and interviewed at halftime, it's kind of nice ways to keep people interested, isn't it? And reward the fans, you know, as someone who isn't a season ticket holder, but reward the people who are going week in and week out. Be like, right, you're the first to hear this. Halftime, bam, we've re-signed these people and then release it.
The guys, I remember, I want to say good 4 or 5 years ago, there was a thing where there was like a, they announced a load of re-signings on the same day. I think it was something like 8 or 9.
Yeah.
And they did that at halftime. And what they did is they brought kids out, and the kids all had, so all the kids had their different shirt name and number.
Yeah, that's right.
I think that was about 5 or 6 years ago. And that was a really nice way of doing it.
Yeah. It just would be nice to be a bit more creative, because social media just seems to be, what's the funniest cartoon or things show that's trending, and how can we do a funny video playing off of that? It's a bit tired, isn't it? And I just thought it was a nice fresh way of doing a re-signing that can be quite dull. It was kind of, quite nice.
Exactly, I agree. But no, all in all, really positive. And then I'm also going to move from one bit of positivity to hopefully another bit of positivity. Gloucester have got a final on Friday, which is, it's been a few years since we could say that, and it's at home, which has never been said before from my understanding. What a great opportunity for the club to win some silverware in the 150th year. It's not going to cover up and make us forget that, you know, we are struggling in the league, but it could be a really good night, and it looks like ticket sales are on track for a sellout. The club seem to have got a few of those commercial decisions right around that. I'd say, I think the season ticket pricing, we're giving it a tenner for people who renewed, you know, 25% off for those that hadn't quite renewed at that point. I think the pricing generally has been fairly sensible. You know, there's a lot to be positive for there. But the game, obviously, we don't, you know, we're going to be without all of our star players in theory, you know, the World Cup players. Leicester the same, with the exception they could call on Andre Pollard because of the weird rules that make up the competition. Jim, what's your sort of gut feeling on this? I mean, is his head ruling heart? Is heart ruling head? What's your feelings for Friday?
I'm nervous as hell. We've had quite an easy run of it in the cup.
We took it seriously, though, to be fair. I mean,
we've taken it seriously. We've put out a stronger team as we pretty much could. Every round, and obviously off the back of that, you know, you make it to a final. And we have actually, I think we've played pretty well in those games as well. We haven't just, you know, won it because we're playing against a bunch of under 20s or something. So. I'm just like, Leicester are really bloody good, and I think it's one of those that we just got to kind of boss it, and if we boss the first 20 minutes well, then we'll be confident to carry on. And I think if that confidence gets rocked in the opening 20 minutes, it could be a pretty painful evening. We do seem to have turned a little bit of a corner. I'd be intrigued. I'm really looking forward to seeing the team sheets.
Yeah, that's gonna be interesting. Just on the team sheet, I'm just looking, going back and seeing the two squads, I should say, sort of the squad that they put out against Ealing. You look at it, you know, there is some proper talent that they can choose from. You've got Rogerson and Liebenberg. You know, they've got Mike Brown, Hassel Collins, Shilcock. There's a lot of players there that you could go, okay, they're half decent. And it's going to be, I think probably for me, the $64,000 question, if we're going to go back to the old days of these sort of things, is are they going to call on Pollard? Because they can, but they've got a game, ironically, the two sides are playing each other the following week. And from probably Leicester's point of view, would you risk Pollard in a, you know, second class competition when you need to win in the Premiership?
I mean, I think there's a danger though to just worry about Pollard, because that's a very good Leicester squad that beat Ealing. I'm just looking at it now. Shilcock's not a bad player. Hassel Collins, Cocker the Singer, Kelly, Matt Scott played. Yeah. Mike Brown, it's a good back line. The front row's pretty good. Back row's ridiculous for this competition. I think
the front row. The front five is going to be the key here.
It's massive. And I think the thing we... Gloucester can't worry about what that Leicester team is. And I think that's what last... I think we're all forgetting that Exeter side that we played was pretty good. They had some good players in there and they tried their damnedest to get as strong a side as they could. So wasn't a given we were going to win that game. Like Jim, I'm a bit nervous. I'm looking forward to going and seeing it live. I mean, the chance to win silverware at King's Home and a fairly meaningful competition. How often does that come round? You don't get that often. It'd be a massive for the club. I think it's our best way to win some silverware. I think you get Europe from it.
No, but
I think the club will know it's silver. I mean, we still need to find a way into Europe then, so part of that point. But it's a really good chance, and the club will know that. They played well against Exeter. They played well against the last few meaningful games that we've won
four in a row now.
I mean, it's a fucking hope that kills you, isn't it? Because you know, we've gone from being really dire, really frustrated by the game plan, to being pulled in and hoping they pull off something special. I mean, it will be a big result if they win, I think, without Pollard, but I think they've got it in them. And I don't think you can discount that King's Own factor. It's going to be massive. And it's one where we all talk about how amazing the fans are, how great that place is under the lights. It's put up or shut up, really, isn't it? The fans have to be behind the team, you know. It's not a game. Finals are not a bitching and moaning time. You have to believe, don't you, until the end. You have to really get behind the boys and help them get over the line. Because I think it's going to be tight, whatever happens.
Yeah, I do think what's interesting, I mean, from what I can gather from the ticket sales, it's almost going to be, there's going to be very few away supporters.
Yeah.
Understandably, it's a Friday night. It's Gold Cup week. It's Gold Cup day.
They won't have any accommodation.
No accommodation. So you're going to have to be there and back in the same night. That's a long day. It's a late night for them. From what I can gather in terms of the ticket pricing and the way it's been done, that there are a lot of fans who are going to their first game of the season. This is
the thing for me. I think, you know, if Gloucester win, I think it could be an absolute, like, just wonder moment for the finances of the club, because I think they'll sell 1,000, 2,000 season tickets off the back of winning, because like you say, there's so many people that are going for the first time this season, maybe their first time ever. Those occasional fans that are going because it is what it is. And if we perform and we win, I can definitely see a lot of people riding that kind of success wave all the way to the ticket office and getting themselves a season ticket, and there might be a lot of people that have been sort of wavering a little bit about renewing, that have been encouraged to renew because of this really good deal with the ticket price, which I think was a clever move. And there'll probably be others that are going, well, you're not going to force me to renew just because so I can get that, but I'm going to go to this game. And then, because I think there are a lot of people that kind of refuse to renew because the team weren't doing particularly well. And I think that, you know, maybe holding on to their money for an extra few weeks is going to kind of fire some rockets up them or something.
Yeah.
it buys. I mean, it's a season where none of us have been overly satisfied. So to be in a final, and they've still got a European competition they could potentially get to, and they've got a good run. But I think Skibs knows it buys him a lot of goodwill.
Oh, yeah. So this buys him a lot of time.
It could save the season. So yeah. the boys will know that, I'm sure. And then it's down to how do you perform under that pressure. And hopefully being at home does feel a big, you know, it's cliche, but it feels like it's worth a lot of points in our favour. I really hope they do it, but I think it's going to be a close game, whatever happens. And like you said, Ed, I think this game really is won or lost in that scrum. If we stop Leicester getting dominance in that scrum, don't give away any daft penalties, which is asking a lot of Gloucester at times. Don't give any daft penalties away, then we've got a chance. Yeah. I will take parity in the scrum massively.
I think our scrum is going to be able to do a lot there.
I'm saying that as somebody who's been impressed by how much it's improved. It really has. And I've bemoaned that we haven't been using it as a weapon, and I think Leicester do use it as a weapon.
Yeah.
So I'm saying that based on who Leicester can probably put out versus who we can put out in the front five. So. You know, if we get a few scrum penalties, I will be delighted. But if we can stop those soft ones, well, let's be honest, if Pollard plays and we give cheap penalties, then we're up against it.
Yeah. Well, to be fair, I'm going to be doing something I don't normally do when I go and watch Gloucester. I'm going to be in the shed on Friday.
Yay!
I will be there with my daughter and my godson and obviously yourself, Russ, and Jim. So we're looking forward to that.
It's my first Gloucester home game. I've been to a couple of aways. I just haven't been able to, you know, I'm obviously delighted to be going to a final. I'm just really looking forward to a game at King's Home to be there in person. So, and I, you know, before anyone accuses me of being a bandwagon, I am hoping to make a couple of others now. It's just been the way things have married out, but yeah, really looking forward to it.
No, it's going to be a good night. I am relatively confident that we're going to do the job, we're going to do the business. And it's just we're just all kind of hoping now that the lads can see it through. On that note, really positive, lovely, happy pod.
Do we all agree if they do lose, because the other two haven't turned up, Loz and Snowy can do it if they lose, so we don't have to
absolutely
relive it or just let them do it. Do one of those two monkeys know how to turn off the on and off recording so you don't even have to edit? We're sorted, aren't we?
I might have to just be there to limit the scene.
I'm seeing a Simpsons where the little bird.
The bird,
just
yeah.
Record, stop. Record, stop.
Yeah, there's been quite a few Simpsons memes this weekend. I think the one I put up on Twitter with Homer grabbing the spoon. Yeah. I was quite proud of that one.
The rest of us, it was all the Ed was right. I know, kids. I'm scared too.
I'm scared
that
too,
was the
yeah.
mem.
That's the one. But no, I think it's weird to have a happy, nice pod. Again, I'm slightly scared. We're just hoping it can continue. Right, thank you very much, guys. Really do appreciate it. We'll be back next week. Fingers crossed, after another England win, a Gloucester Cup win, a trophy, and Jim and Russ getting absolutely smashed, I'm going to be really sensible and sober. It's really annoying.
Anyway, really?
Yeah, I do.
What? Seriously? Yeah.
I do have to be really sensible.
He's got a special guest.
I've got my special guest as well, which I have to. So I have to be sensible and sober. Yeah.
Weird.
Anyway, thanks a lot, guys.